One.
ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Presented by Zadok Jewelers. KFNC and KFNC HD2, Mont Bellevue, Houston.
Hola, soy Mateo Bajamit. Les quería mandar un saludo muy grande a Soccer Mothers. Y les mando un abrazo muy grande.
Ya Bolivia comienza a conformarse. Messi, se viene Lionel, va Messi, está habilitado Lautaro Martínez. Le quedó para el gol ahora Joaquín Correa al arco. ¡Gol! ¡Argentina!
Game winner for Argentina today, 2-1 victors over Bolivia. And you may say, well, that's not that big a deal. Yes, it is when you're playing in La Paz, Bolivia. It's a 2-1 win for Argentina. Messi apparently playing very well in that one as a creator and as a distributor. They have a full 6 points in two games. Halftime, it's Peru and Brazil 1-1. But let's bring on the man who's been watching these games and has real opinion on them today. He is Juan Arango, covers all kinds of South American soccer. He is a commentator in both English and Spanish, and he joins us now. Juan, how are you?
What's up, Glenn? How are you, man? Watching here Colombia and Chile play, man. It's a sensational match for the Colombians. Chile not playing too shabby either, and now Colombia down to their third right back as Stefan Medina just was carted off, and Steven Alzate, the man from Brighton, coming in for Carlos Queiroz. So again, Colombia playing sensational football. And Chile coming right back. To me, as I mentioned on several occasions elsewhere, I've also mentioned that this was, to me, the marquee matchup of the round.
Yeah, this one did look like it. And you know, it's funny, because right down the street from me, there's a bar, and it has become the Colombia supporters group bar. It's pretty cool. And I saw him setting up. I was walking my dog before the show tonight. All right, so take me into the Argentina-Bolivia game, because you said some really interesting things today. I saw on Twitter where you put out that for everybody that thinks Denver's Mile High Stadium is up there, think about La Paz, Bolivia.
Well, yeah, I mean, La Paz is 3,650 meters, which is almost, it's 11,000, I'm calculating off the top of my head, I think it's 11,975 feet above sea level, which is more than twice than Denver's Mile High. It would be the highest peaks in the United States to be around the same as one in New Mexico in terms of that. It's maybe about a couple of feet higher up in New Mexico than it is. I mean, like 5 or 6 feet, just to give you, you know, people start having hallucinations and start becoming short of breath at that type of altitude. And Argentina flew in on Sunday, started getting acclimated. It was funny. I mean, obviously, from the outside looking in, you see Papu Gomez and a couple other players. As soon as they arrived, they got off the plane in La Paz, the first thing they reached for was an oxygen tank, because they were already suffering. I mean, they were already struggling big time to be able to acclimate. Messi has had a history of struggling in La Paz, and he's been quite frank about it. But Argentina played very intelligently, and at the end, they played better than Bolivia, and the altitude, again, at certain points, ends up being something that just kind of papers over the cracks as far as what Bolivia's been going through, what Bolivia actually has in terms of substance. And I think that's where the great equalizer lies, because if they would have played this in Buenos Aires, it would have been an absolute blowout.
Okay, so let me take you into this one. You said Argentina played better. In what way? Tell me.
First, one of the things that, especially in the second half, what I did see from Argentina was that there was an association being set up between Leo Messi and Lautaro Martinez. Part of the reason why the second goal came to be, Messi, of course, recovering the ball, sending it to Martinez, and eventually Martinez finding Joaquin Correa over on the left. Also, you saw a lot of movement from the outside backs. You saw some, so obviously limited because of the fatigue, the runs had to be with more intent than anything else. But you saw better play in terms. They were able to pace themselves a little bit better. And more importantly, when they settled down into the match, after Bolivia scored, they settled down, they slowed down the game a bit more. The midfield of Bolivia completely dissolved. You didn't see as many of the piercing runs, especially down the left, and that ended up being one of them, of course, the cross from Chumacero over to Marcelo Moreno Martins that opened up the scoring for Bolivia. That, to me, was one of the big keys of the match. When Argentina finally settled down, started playing more of their game, started finding Lucas Ocampos, Messi started getting the ball more to Martinez and vice versa. That's where you start to see the dynamic change a little bit more, in my opinion.
Talking to Juan Arango today, real great expert on CONMEBOL and everything in South America, based out of Miami. And he's a commentator on all kinds of differing leagues, including the Libertadores and Sudamericana. Is this the greatest advantage in sports? La Paz, Bolivia, where Bolivia's national team plays soccer?
When Marco Echeverry was playing, yes.
Well, don't forget Juan Valdivieso as well.
Yes, yeah, of course. Him, Valdivieso, Platini, Sanchez, all of that generation. That's part of the reason why Argentina and Brazil and Uruguay started complaining about the altitude, because that generation came along and started playing at a very competitive level and were able to beat them on several occasions in La Paz. That's something to also keep in mind. But this Bolivia generation, this Bolivia team, to me is very limited, is extremely limited, as a matter of fact. And to make things worse, looks like Arturo Vidal is in trouble right now. I'm watching the game at the same time. But this Bolivia side, despite Cesar Farias leaving half of the team in Bolivia to wait for this match, because this is the one that he believed he would get points from, that was going to be that, just to see how limited they were after a certain point. It just really was disappointing.
Yep. Let me get you into Ecuador and Uruguay, because this was 4-0 until I think the 82nd and 84th minute. Again, though, the altitude in Quito, right?
Yes, and actually this, to me, was the match where you could see the upset, or the relative upset, if you will, in this round. I liked what I saw in terms of this Ecuador side. It was a team that showed a great deal of pace. It was a team that was aware of what they could do. Okay, let's drop back and wait. And as soon as Uruguay made a mistake, they went on the counter. They were able to take advantage of the wings. They were able to be able to take advantage of also a lot of defensive liabilities that you saw in Uruguay in the back. Godin had a horrid game. You saw a lot of the usually solid players for Uruguay start to struggle. Ronald Araujo, I felt horrible for him. It was his debut as a starter for the Uruguayan national team, the young central defender from Barcelona, and he just had a nightmare. And that's, to me, one of the big problems. And more importantly, with Ecuador, seeing some of the younger players begin to emerge, the Campanas, the Moises Caicedos, the Platas, those types of players, and to me, that's a penalty for Chile right now. So we'll see how things go there.
And yeah, how about Arriaga from Seattle? How did he play the center back?
Very well. Very well as well. And those two goals towards the end, that's more attributable to lapses, that the match was already over.
Yeah.
Ecuador was already kind of putting, you know, the foot off the pedal a little bit more, ahead 4-0. And yeah, there were some issues there as far as focusing, but I think that's something Gustavo Alfaro will take any day of the week compared to what happened in Argentina, where they were just way too conservative, and any counterattack of importance would have been able to make a difference in that match. They would have been able to get a point out of Buenos Aires if they would have been able to be more ambitious, have more gumption to go forward and see what could have happened in that particular match.
By the way, Ecuador out shooting Uruguay 17-6, seven shots on goal to 2 for Uruguay. How about a thought or two on Brazil and Peru? Have you been able to keep an eye on that as well? I know you got so many games going on here. By the way, it's killing me not being able to watch these games live. It's absolutely killing me.
Yeah, it's been a back and forth. Andre Carrillo with just, a first-time volley of impeccable proportions from outside. Brazil equalizing with Neymar. So it's been as advertised. Both teams have been going after each other. Same thing with Chile, Colombia. And it's, again, an interesting set of circumstances as Arturo Vidal just equalizes for Chile from the penalty spot. I mean, it's been the case in that match. A lot of physicality. Same thing here with Chile and Colombia. As obviously, as soon as Chile settled down and the mistakes, that, you know, little mistakes that Colombia have made, finally have paid off for Chile, and now you start to see a bit more of an even matchup. But again, these two.
Well, they went to VAR. They went to VAR on that penalty, didn't they?
Yes, they did. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, and yeah, it was some contact against Vidal, and finally the referee pointed to the spot, and Vidal just roofed it. Nothing that Camilo Vargas could do on that one. Just one all at 37. So it's been interesting. I mean, it's been an interesting round. You know, Argentina winning for the first time in 15 years. Last time that they were able to win in La Paz happened to be, you know, Scaloni was still a player for the national team. So I mean, all these storylines that are developing truly makes this second round all the more interesting. Also, Paraguay being saved towards the end. They're able to get the 3 points in Venezuela after a great save by Anthony Silva. So a lot of things have been going on in this round.
Yeah, and that came very, very late, that full three points. Let me just take you back to the whole CONMEBOL and how grueling this process is. And you know, the Ecuador matches and the Bolivia matches where you got to play at these ridiculous altitudes that are beyond belief to the human body. Just take me into now MLS, because I feel you're lukewarm on MLS, and MLS is now getting a lot of South American players. Why aren't you a little bit more interested in Inter Miami, where you live, and Major League Soccer, because of all the influence of Argentine players and Colombians, Ecuadorians, Uruguayans that play in the league?
It's not lukewarm. And you know what? I'm glad that you mentioned that, because I had a conversation once with Hercules Gomez, and of course from ESPN, and we talked about it. And hey, you know what? You have to give MLS its place, you know. And I think that there's a lot of things in terms of what MLS offers that are phenomenal. That you see these younger players coming out of South America getting a great opportunity. I mean, Brian Rodriguez, the Diego Rossis. You've seen several of those players get called up. Rodolfo Pizarro for Mexico. As I mentioned before, last time we were talking, Robbie Robinson might get a chance at Chile. Yeah, I mean, there's a great deal of growth going on in MLS. So you have to say exactly what it is. There is growth going on. That being said, is it where it needs to be? Is it where it can be? There's still growth to be made, and I think we can agree on that there's still lots. And obviously, having been, 25 years now, there's still a long ways to go.
But take me into specifics. What are the things? I mean, you want improved quality of play. Tell me what specifically for you, though, and that may be something specific to what you absolutely love to take out of the game, and it may be different than somebody else. What are those specifics that you want more out of the Major League Soccer product? Like, I was just on a minute ago talking about Nashville, and I'm like, who's buying a season ticket to this? They've scored 6 goals in the run of play out of only 12 goals, and every game they come to defend, and it's like they don't even want the ball. It's not good enough for me. I'm not buying a season ticket to that. I'm sorry. And what surprises me is this is an expansion team who's got an absolutely clean sheet. And they hire a coach. And again, I'm not bagging on Gary Smith. He's a good gentleman. He's obviously won an MLS Cup, something I've never done, okay, as a coach with Colorado. But I'm saying to myself, you know, your calling card, your identity is the style of play, your purpose of play, the way you present yourself, your entertainment value. We're in a country that you got to provide entertainment value. So what are those specifics that you want?
I'm looking more for solid. But, oof, Alexis Sanchez just made it 2-1. As far as specifics, all right. The first thing that I was looking at is more in terms of balance. That there's way too many and I've talked to my partner, my broadcast partner Nigel Rio Coker, and he's talked about, okay, what type of identity? And you just mentioned it as well. What type of identity is X or Y team looking to establish? There's a lot of times that you hear a lot. Well, we were an offensive flow. We're looking to be a very offensive team. Okay, what does that mean? So I mean, there's a lot of phrases that are thrown around that at times you're not sure. Is it, hey, you know, is it something like a selling point, or is it something that you're intent on doing?
It's rhetoric.
Yeah, exactly. So you hear a lot of that. And at times you're like, wait a second, you know, free-flowing football, what does that mean? you understand what I'm saying? So you hear that a lot. I'm like, wait, this is not my interpretation.
But the people asking those questions, when they get that answer, have to say, please take me a little deeper into what that means. What are the specifics
of
that? But,
exactly.
But that follow-up question does not come very often.
Yeah, exactly. And the few times that it does, it gets shut down.
Yeah. Are we too sensitive?
This is not me trying to say what you want to hear, what anyone wants to hear. It's that a lot of times when I've come out with that question, okay, what does that mean? There's no answer, or it's just, you know, a repetition of a lot of things. I'm like, wait, hold on.
Well, how dare you ask a good question? I mean, that's why it's great down here with Todd Ramos. He's going to answer anything you want.
Yeah.
And he's going to go into specifics.
I've had the pleasure of asking Tab a few questions when he was the under 20 coach, and a lot of them I agreed with, a lot of them I didn't, and I think that's also part of it. I mean, it's the beauty of this. We may not agree, but still, if a transparent answer is given, I believe that it's worth respecting. Okay, fine, I don't agree with it, but if that's how you see it, perfect. That's fine. That's fair. But when you're looked at and you're given it, and you ask a question, and you're giving the evil eye, or you're kind of nudged aside, you're like, well, okay, I guess, all right, fine.
Well, you know, I think some coaches can handle it. Some don't want to handle it, and I get it when guys are older coaches and they've kind of been there, done that. But I also think that I think it's imperative now, especially for a lot of clubs and markets that are struggling, that their head coach has got to be a fulcrum. He's got to be a leader. He's got to be an educator. He's, in some ways, I'm sorry, but he's got to be a salesman. I get it's only about winning, but it's okay.
Oh, no, it's okay. I mean, whether if there's a plan and they go and abide by that plan, there's going to be wins. There's going to be losses. Okay, that's fine. But as long as you know where they're heading, and you don't ask one question this week and you get one answer, and then you ask the same question the next week and you get a completely different answer, and you're like, wait a second, I thought you were going in this direction, not that direction. So to me, it's more of that. You don't get at times a concise answer from some of the people within the league, and I understand it. I respect it. But
yeah, at the end of the day, we have to respect what the coach says, and if he doesn't want to answer it, it's okay. But at least you've asked the question. If he hasn't answered it, people at home can determine, he didn't really answer that well, or he did. Listen, Juan, I'm up on a hard break. Tremendous stuff here. By the way, I love when goals are being scored and you're breaking in, and it's awesome. So thank you for that.
I know you're not watching, and you're playing like, oh God.
Okay, I need your secret for watching Coma Bowl, so we'll talk about that. All right. Thank you so much.
I don't know if we want to go down that rabbit hole, but anyway.
Yeah, no.
I'm kidding.
Have to watch it on re-air on BN. Listen, thank you so much for coming on the program tonight. Appreciate it. Appreciate your knowledge, your passion, and get back to watching the games. And we'll talk soon. Okay.
And you too, man. I look forward to talking to you soon, man. Take care.
All right. That's Juan Arango. We're going to take a break here. Soccer Matters brought to you by, you got it, John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm.
Well, hello! To call into the HR&P listener line, dial 713-780-ESPN.
Dial the phone.
Looking to outsource your company's HR and payroll? Get the top initiative and smart solutions with HRP.net.
I'm Tyler Adams, and you are listening to Soccer Matters with Glenn Davis on ESPN 97.5.
Norway with plenty forward. One of them is Haaland, and unsurprisingly, the first chance that Haaland has, he takes, and Norway lead. Berger. It's come to Ødegaard, teed up for Haaland, 3-0. Very, very simple Norway goal. Mitja, powerful to win it back. Sørloth, Haaland, there's the moment. It is an Erling Haaland hat-trick, his first for his country.
You know, it's sad Eddie Van Halen passed away. Welcome you back, presented by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. This is some more Van Halen being played by Aaron Raybould. Jump. So here's what's going on with Ari Lasseter. It was miscommunication tonight, mostly on my end. I'm going to take the fall for this, but there was some miscommunication. So what I didn't want to do was bring him on for a very short segment here. We want to bring him on for a full segment, talk about his career in Costa Rica, his father and some of the other things that are a part of his soccer career. So we will have him on next week. 100%. Okay. So that's what we're doing there. So I apologize for that. Chile is now up 2-1 over Colombia at halftime. Arturo Vidal and Alexis Sanchez responding to a 7th-minute goal from Jefferson Lerma, who, by the way, gave the penalty away that Vidal then hit. So we're going to bring on from Soccer Matters, Victor Ariza. Victor joins us now. Hey, Victor.
Hey, what's going on, Glenn?
All right, so I wanted to bring you on because I wanted to talk about the Mexico result today, and you and I got into a nice conversation about Tecatito Corona, who plays at Porto, which is the team that put a pasting on Boavista and Reggie Cannon and La Pantarita's team in Portugal. And you and I started talking about him. That won't be the most memorable debut, but. But anyway, you brought up a great point about him. It's 5 years at Porto. He's 27 years of age. You and I started talking and said, you know, this may be the time for him to really transfer. He's in the prime of his career. He's enhanced a lot of things, including he's become a little bit more stronger. And then Tata Martino, in a Tom Marshall article, basically said that this is a guy that is doing all the dirty work, cutting passing lanes down, helping out defensively. So take me into your thought process about Tecatito Corona.
Yeah, well, I think the consensus amongst Mexico fans is he's been the best player on the team for a couple of years now. I mean, you could probably even trace that, for sure, back end of the Juan Carlos Osorio days. He's been a spark since he was young for Mexico, and now, you know, like you said, we blinked, right? It's 5 years now at Porto. It seems like now would be a good time for him to move, especially because you watch Netherlands game and you see kind of how dominant he is on that side, how resourceful, how he kind of creates something out of nothing with his feet, right? Today, also against Algeria. You know, when the team was struggling against a 10-man Algeria, and he's the kind of guy that, you know, give him the ball, right? Give the ball to your best player and, kind of tries to penetrate the defense. And even when he didn't, there was one play especially where, it didn't work out for him. Immediately he recovers the ball and then, you know, takes on two more defenders. And then, you know, the play ends up resulting in a corner for Mexico. And that's the kind of player he is. To me, I think he is the best player that Mexico has, you know, and that is no offense to Jimenez. I just think, we're talking as two different players, but I think
that's two completely different players. I mean, one guy's a target guy and the other guy. But, you know, I even look at Corona now, and to me, Victor, he just seems stronger, more powerful. He just seems capable of even more. I mean, listen, I get technically where he is. But he just looks more powerful. He looks more accountable, more responsible.
Yeah, and especially, I mean, if this is how he's playing at Porto in the Portuguese league, where I think maybe he might have hit a ceiling. He might not be as challenged as he would be in other leagues, right? Like the Spanish league or the Premier League. One of Europe's top five. Just leave it at that. then you think maybe he's got a little bit more to give, right? Especially now that he's in his prime. But it seems like he may be in a bit of a purgatory here, but, you know, and I don't know if it's necessarily a bad thing, but he's kind of stuck in the Portuguese league.
Yeah, and it's funny because we haven't really, I mean, have we heard him publicly say he desires a move somewhere to a bigger club in a bigger league?
I mean, I don't think we've seen, not...
He's been linked to Chelsea, we know that.
Not overly loud, but I think obviously he wouldn't be opposed. I think also, I was mentioning this earlier, I think earlier was rumored that he was, maybe Wolves might be interested because of the way Jimenez has been so successful. But I think what it also comes down to is what's his value. I think out in the market, he's probably the most, he's the Mexican with the biggest price tag, and that's not necessarily the greatest thing for him because it's, you know, not a lot of shoppers are going to shell out, you know, I don't know what, I think what I kept hearing, or at least whatever keeps on getting rumored, something around like a $30 million price tag, and that's a lot of money to shell out for.
That's a lot of money. You know what I'd shell out?
27-year-old player.
Yeah, I'd shell that out for you, though. Your contributions on this show are fantastic. We're up on a hard break. Maybe not 30, probably $28 million for you. But your thoughts are great on Tecatito Corona. Thank you for coming on, Victor, on short notice, as always. And whenever I talk to you about soccer, something good always comes out. We'll take a break here. Thank you, Victor. And we will come back with Janine Becky. And it's all right.
ESPN 97.5.
Final segment of Soccer Matters as we welcome you back, and it's brought to you by NB Elite Realty. Nebo Bandovic was a leading scorer for the Houston Hotshots, the indoor days back at the Summit. He wants to invite you to start your journey to financial freedom through real estate investing. After finishing his soccer career, Nebo went on to build a real estate investing empire with a multi-million dollar portfolio, and he wants to teach you how to do the same thing. All you got to do is follow Nebo at NEBANDOVIC at Nebo Bandovic on Instagram for daily investment tips, secrets, and more information on how to be mentored by the master himself through his VIP program. That's at Nebo Bandovic, NEBOBANDOVIC on Instagram. Get over there. Also, Lustav Vermouth. Remember, Lustav Vermouth goes great whether over ice with tonic water, a club soda with a twist of lime, or in a gin and tonic. It's Lustav Vermouth. Ask for it at your local liquor store. Final interview of the night, and we know that in England now. All the major Premier League teams, well, they've got women's teams as well, and the league is growing. They're signing a lot of great international talent, including many from the United States and Canada. Janine Becky plays for Manchester City. She comes on now. We compare the leagues. We talk about her career in the game and what's happening in England.
Janine, thank you very much for coming on the program.
Thanks so much for having me. I remember back when I was in Houston and we were on the show, so it's come full circle.
Yeah, yeah. Now, I couldn't make it over to Manchester, but we'll have to just do it via conference here. So excited to talk to you about City. Let's just first off start about a little bit about just your general thoughts on where the sport, the women's game is in England and with this growth of the women's game.
I think it's easy to say that even in the 2 years, this is my third year that I've been here, the game has come so far just here in England. And you could say that for, you know, definitely in the US and Canada and a lot of other places in Europe. But I think with the Lionesses doing so well at the 2019 World Cup, it really amped up the watch hours that people were putting into to women's football and just the commitment by brands. Obviously Barclays bought the league last year, which is fantastic. It's a huge sponsor for us. So we've really gone up the ranks in terms of popularity over here in England over the last 2 years. And hoping that it continues to be on the rise.
All right. Through your lens, I mean, you've done it all. The youth game, the college game, the NWSL. You've played internationally, won a bronze medal at the Olympics. Now you're over in England, a part of this growth of this new professional league with all these massive brands like Manchester City. Looking through your lens, what was the appeal now to go over to England?
I think originally my motivation was, where can I put myself in the best position to be at the top of my game come the World Cup last summer? So for me, that was my main motivation. I also wanted to experience playing overseas while I was still in my younger years and my younger career. So I'm 26 now. I was just 23 when I moved over here, turning 24. So that was really exciting for me to make that move when I was still young and didn't really have any roots down in the U.S. A lot. So I think the attraction was, this is going to be a place where I'm going to get better in a short amount of time, because it's a challenging environment with top international players from all across the world. And that's what I want to be. That's where I want to be to perform at the World Cup. So that was my initial motivation. And I just have loved every second since I've been here. I absolutely got what I was looking for when I came here and feel like I was at the top of my game going into 2019 that summer, which was, it's crazy that it's just last summer because it feels so long ago. But even since then, I've just taken massive strides in my game, and I can just see the difference that being here has made.
What about just the simple notion of, you know, when we talk about the men's game, you know, guys in Major League Soccer, they want to go, you know, Europe may be the pinnacle, right? It could be England. It could be the Premier League. Whatever it is, it could be a change of environment, culture. What are some of the other factors? Is it facilities? Is it brand recognition? Is it the attention the game may get in Manchester? Because to me, it looks like you get tremendous coverage in the Manchester Evening News.
Yeah, and the media coverage has, like the game, really grown over the last couple years. I would say probably noticeably the last 5-6 years, maybe even decade. It's really significantly inclined. And when you talk about, you know, what are the other motivations, I believe that by far we are at least top three in the world in facilities. And the commitment that the club has made financially into the women's team to bring big-time players all together. So if you look at the roster that we have this season, we've got big-time world players on our team, top internationals. I mean, that's not cheap to bring all of those players together. So the financial investment that the club has made a massive difference. And that's what you have to do to win the trophies that we want to win. I think the difference being in England from a cultural perspective is that football is life here. It's what people, you know, they're born a City fan, they die a City fan, or, you know, whatever other team you support. And you really feel that in just living in the culture. And it's been really fun to experience that as someone who's played my whole life and been incredibly interested in the Premier League since I started watching the game. So to now, you know, share a facility with these men's players that you ever only watch and you can dream of, you know, being like them one day. And just being held to that standard has been really, really cool. And I think there's a long way to go, don't get me wrong. But being here has really opened my eyes to the potential of women's football, especially in the last couple of years.
Talking to Janine Becky of Manchester City. So does that aid in player development? I would have to think so, that being in that culture, being in that environment, soccer all the time, as opposed to the U.S. where, you know, we're a part of a giant sports landscape with other traditional sports. I would have to say, does that, or let me ask you, does that aid in player development?
I think so. I think when you look at the system, the youth system in the U.S. compared to the youth system in England, and I think both have their pros and cons. I absolutely love growing up in a country where sports in general are so highly valued. You know, I played all kinds of sports growing up. I was definitely not soccer specific, not even in high school. So, but here, you know, I have players on my team who are 21 years old and have been professionals for 4 years. So it's wild that, you know, they kind of grow up playing for their local team. And then, you know, at 14, 15, you're starting to look at a club that you potentially want to go professional with. And that's just so different than the U.S. And I think there's massive benefits to that. You know, those players are playing at the highest level of the game so, so young, and may find their peak in their game at a much younger age than maybe someone like me who went through the college system, which was incredibly important for my development. And then, you know, I'm 26 and I have those teammates that are 21 and, you know, we're playing at the same level. So it's definitely personal. But I do think being in this culture develops players at a faster rate at a younger age, because it just starts a little bit earlier. The level is higher at a younger age.
Just curious, is there much crossover with the men's team? In other words, do they take interest in watching your games like you do with theirs potentially?
Yeah, I think there's a little bit of crossover. Obviously, they have an incredibly busy season. And this, because of the craziness that's going on in the world right now, we've become quite busy as well. So we're on separate sides of the building. That's just the way that it's set up. But, you know, there's appearances that some of the girls get to do with the men's players. And anytime I've come into contact with one of them, they're super friendly, very interested in what's going on. A few of them popped out to watch us train in preseason just from a distance. So it's really cool to see them around, and also to kind of have that recognition that we're all doing the same thing, and we're all wearing blue. We're all for the same club. So I think there's a lot of camaraderie being at City with staff, players, men's team, women's team, academy. That's really special and quite unique to City.
NBC has been covering your games. I watched the game this weekend. I mean, it's pretty incredible coverage. And it's over here in the U.S. It's kind of like coming in the NWSL's backyard here. So I'm thinking that competition is a good thing. For you to know that your games are on in the United States and your family can watch, and this is a part of the plan to expose people to the Women's League in England, I got to think this is pretty uplifting.
It's fantastic. And actually, although time change can be very frustrating because of trying to talk to family, it's obviously early in the morning. One of my favorite things was to be able to get up and watch the Premier League early in the morning. And now the reality is that women's soccer fans get to wake up early in the morning and watch our games. And I think it's just a testament to the commitment that I spoke about earlier of the media to cover our games and the talent that our league is seeing. And obviously with the times being how they are and the NWSL just wrapping up their fall series, we're one of the most attractive leagues to be watching right now. We've got top internationals all over the league. This will be the most competitive that the WSL has ever been. And obviously with the transfer of a lot of the American players over here, there's more interest from the U.S. to watch these games, which has benefited me fantastically because I have family and friends that are always wondering how they can watch our games. And the FA launched the FA player last season, which was fantastic because all the games were streamed live, but it's different than having a TV broadcast. And obviously NBC does such a great job with their broadcasts, and we're all really excited to hear that was going to be happening.
She's Janine Becky. She played at Texas Tech under Tom Stone. 2016 Olympics in Rio, had 3 goals for Canada. They won a bronze medal, historic moment for Canada. COVID challenges. Tell me a little bit about how you guys have navigated that, or you ladies have navigated that.
Yeah, well, first off, I have to say the club and the league and the Premier League and everyone has done a fantastic job managing the situation and putting the safety protocols in place to continue to let us play. I think that it's, at this point, you know, it's just exciting that we're continuing to play games. And obviously there's the we wish this and we wish that, and it's been really hard to play without fans. But yeah, I think when it came on, we were kind of starting the last third of our season back in March. And I remember we were about to play the FA Cup quarterfinal game against Leicester, and they said, you have to shut the facility down for a week. And now I laugh at that because I'm like, who thought that this was going to be gone in a week, or that the information was going to change. But so actually the club ended up allowing me to go back home and fly back to the States. So I actually spent about 3.5 months in Colorado with my mom, which was great. A lot of family time there, but we came back and obviously the season didn't continue, which was disappointing, but totally understandable. And yeah, we've been in a really strict bubble, quite restricted. Everyone is in terms of going out, wearing masks. We're quite careful to not be eating in restaurants and really limit our exposure to other people, which is difficult, but also it's worth it to be able to continue to play. And knock on wood, we've been really lucky with our club. They've done an incredible job managing and put in the financial resources for us to be tested weekly, which has been really important, and just gives us a sense of a peace about that, knowing that we're in an environment that's COVID-free and we want to continue that. So keep listening to the government guidelines, but we're getting on.
So the differences now in the NWSL from a tactical and maybe an athletic standpoint to playing in England now, what are they, and what is more maybe appealing to you playing in England than the NWSL and vice versa?
Yeah, I've answered this question so many times, and every time the question comes up, I'm like, how do I answer this in the best way? With my experience in the NWSL, obviously now I've been away from the league for a few years, and I follow it very closely. I obviously have tons of friends and former teammates that are still there, and have an incredible amount of respect for what the NWSL is doing, and have an incredible amount of respect for the way that the game is played there. And I think naturally, when you speak about athleticism and things like that, it is naturally a more transitional game. There's a lot more, I think if you looked at the data, there'd probably be more distance covered, more high-speed running, and I don't really know what the reason is for that, other than that is kind of the American model. And in my opinion, it's shifting to a more tactical, possession-based game, which was what my attraction was to come here, especially at a club like City, where you watch Pep's team bounce the ball around, and they're very, very pretty team to watch. But then they get the job done. They're ruthless. And I think that's definitely how the women's team works as well, and how it's been since I've been here. But we are kind of seeing now that more players are coming between leagues, and we're seeing players from all over the world play in both leagues. It's evening out. And the game is more similar than ever before. The game here is more athletic and demanding than it ever has been. And that's exciting, because that's what I brought here when I came. And then what they've given me is a better tactical sense, higher standards technically, to be good on the ball, to be sharp. So I think that there's so many benefits to both leagues, and I've seen both of those benefits and been really lucky to play in both leagues. And I'm interested to go back to the NWSL at some point and experience the difference.
Will this, in a healthy way, raise the bar for the NWSL? Because, look, we've seen different – Tobin Heath, you mentioned Kristen Press. You're kind of a harbinger getting over there before some of these other players. Rose Lavelle's on your team, Sam Mewis. Is this going to raise the bar for the NWSL? And in the end, is this going to be better for everybody?
Absolutely. I think it's great for the WSL to have these players come over. I mean, who's going to complain about having a world champion on their team? I don't think very many people. So Sam and Rose have come into our environment and definitely pushed the standard and raised the level, because they're fantastic players. And I think that obviously with the climate of the world right now, we're lucky that we're playing a pretty normal season. So obviously that was a big attraction for those players, but also speaking to them one-on-one, the attraction was the game. And the difference and the challenges that they'll face having never played anywhere but at home. And I think that absolutely it'll be better for everyone. And I think that their influence of playing in the NWSL has an effect on players here, potentially wanting to go to the NWSL and experience that, which is great. Obviously, selfishly, I want more international players in the NWSL to continue to raise the bar. But we'll see it. And I think we're definitely seeing the benefit of having players come overseas.
Security too. I mean, you've signed a long-term contract. Now, I know you and I had spoke before we did the interview about some people are coming on loan and others are signing longer term deals. I mean, security is not something that the women's player has always had. This has got to be something that's a very, very appealing.
Absolutely, and especially in these times. I mean, everyone's trying to find that security in jobs, in anything. So I think, yeah, it's been a long time coming for women's soccer to have a really stable environment for players to depend on. And I think that it's a testament to the leagues continuing to put money into the game and signing, you know, more than 1 and 2 year deals. You know, we're seeing 3, 4, and 5 year deals some places, which is so typical in the men's game, but not very typical in the women's game. And it's so important that we go there so that we don't see so much change all the time, so that there is some stability and some foundation to having competitive leagues. Because like I said before, this will be the most competitive the WSL has ever been. And you don't want that to just be for a year. So these teams are making the investment, and I think that's really important.
Talking to Janine Becky, we're going to wrap it up here with two quick ones. Janine plays for Manchester City in England. All right, are you used to calling it football over soccer now?
Yes, people are nice about it. They don't, I got made fun of when I first came here saying soccer. I think it just sounds so weird to them. And obviously in the States, when you say football, people assume you're saying American football. So I go back and forth kind of depending on who I talk to, but I definitely feel more comfortable saying football than ever before.
Look up soccer. You might be surprised of its origins. Just that's all I'll tell you.
I didn't even do that. That's a good.
Look up the word soccer and its origins. And then the last one. England's a tea country, but you tell me you drink coffee. Can they make a good cup over there? Because I'm just curious. Yeah,
there is fantastic coffee where I am, but I have started to be a tea drinker. I never saw what it was about English tea, but I definitely have started to drink a few cups. So I'm broadening my horizons, is what I like to say.
Well, Janine, thank you so much. I very much appreciate this. A very enlightening interview. I think people are obviously have enjoyed this, and we appreciate you coming on. Best of luck with Manchester City.
Thanks. Thanks so much for having me.
What a great way to end the show here tonight with Janine Becky from across the Atlantic talking about the women's game. All right, don't forget tomorrow, it's the Houston Dynamo Nashville, Channel 55. Join Eddie Robinson and Cindy Bourbano and myself for the call of that game. Also, a big thank you tonight, as always, to Aaron Raybould. Also, to Victor Ariza for all his great contributions. A big thank you to you for tuning in. Remember the podcasts at podcastarena.com, iTunes, or on Spotify. And as always, a big thank you to John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. John and his firm, personal injury attorneys. You get in an accident, you call the Daspit Law Firm, 713-322-HURT. They are bilingual. They're going to work for you 24/7, nights and weekends. Thank you, Daspit Law Firm, for getting soccer talk on the air. On behalf of the firm, I'm Glenn Davis.
ESPN 97.5.